As you remember from our premiere, Elon Musk came in and was a big fan of the movie. None of the concerns that we've talked about so far are even on his list, really. He and a group of people are very concerned about a supreme artificial intelligence, sometimes known as AGI or superintelligence, about computers leaving human beings behind in what seems like a science fiction scenario. But other folks believe that this is coming very soon to us and that it's a true danger.
Veritone presents Adventures in AI, the podcast that dives into the many ways artificial intelligence is shaping our future for the better. I'm your host, Kevin Ells, and today we'll be talking with Chris Payne, director and producer of the documentary, Do You Trust This Computer?, about how AI is changing our world for the better, or maybe not so better. Chris, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me on, Kevin.
So first of all, Chris, love the documentary. I was lucky enough to be invited to the premiere along with Elon Musk, although he had a slightly better seat. I think I've seen it four times now since the release in 2018, and the material presented is as relevant and accurate today as it was when it was released. As the documentary states,
today, a new generation of self-learning computers is reshaping every aspect of our lives. Will AI usher in an age of unprecedented potential, or prove to be our final invention?
Chris, why did you first want to investigate and answer the question, do you trust this computer?
Well, it was one of those moments where I plugged in my smartphone to a new laptop, and the software asked me whether I trusted my computer or not. And I thought, wow, that's a really interesting question, because trust is such a fundamental relationship between people. And this is asking me about, do I trust this machine? And of course, I didn't make my smartphone or the software in between it or control the cloud. And so, you know, the answer, I think, for most of us, or certainly was for me that day, was I don't think I trust it, but I need to live with this machine. It made us start thinking about what's going on with computers and what we're calling artificial intelligence right now. And this might make a good film.
It does. A big wake-up moment for all of us to AI profiling and trust was from Facebook scandal and Cambridge Analytica. The question is, should we really trust tech companies with our data and all that AI analyzing that content?
It's funny you mentioned the Cambridge Analytica. You know, we had finished our film, pretty much finished, and we didn't really have a third act. We were talking about things that are great about AI, things that are like questionable or that could lead to dangerous outcomes. But we didn't have a particularly good example for a dangerous outcome. And I think it was Jonah Nolan, who was the showrunner on Westworld and wrote the movie Interstellar with his brother, said to me, did you see the article on Motherboard about this company, Cambridge Analytica? And I read the article and I went, wow, I think that's our third act in terms of things that we need to be on the watch out for. Like, you know, not just AI itself, but this kind of technology in the hands of bad actors. And that's a real trust issue. It's like, are we trusting that the information we're being served, whether it's fake news or if it's any information we get, what filters is it going through before it gets to us?
So do you trust it? I don't trust them with it, that's for sure. But as you said before, we have to live with it. So it's a matter of, we may not trust it, but we can be also careful on how much information we're giving them and try to limit as much as we can.
Well, yes, true. And, you know, even in human relationships, it's like, how much do we trust each other and how far does it go? And we could be totally distrusting of everything and live in a bomb shelter. That's not going to make much of a life for us.
No.
Whether with other people or even with technology, it's how are you aware of what are the fundamental issues about trust and how do you negotiate them so that you can live with them?
True. One thing that I think we're somewhat afraid of, when you think of AI, you think of robots. How are you seeing AI and robots changing our lives?
Robots is a great question, too. You know, most people thought about the dangers of computers, of course, being the Hollywood version, which is robots shooting at people. And, of course, Terminator was kind of the perfect example of that.
Right.
And they called it AI, but really people were thinking robots. And at least in science fiction, one of the great examples on the screen was the HAL the computer from 2001, where it wasn't a robot. It was truly just a computer that was behind the scenes doing things. Mm-hmm. But robots are the visual example, which is why Hollywood and even documentaries, we love robots because there's something to look at. And certainly when we were making our film, and even today, Boston Dynamics had the most visual robots out there, the dogs that they're developing for the military and all the rest of them. They're terrific visuals.
All right.
What AI is really about is not so much those 3D manifestations, at least not right now, but it's more like what's going on all around us on our phones and what your company is doing,
yep.
The technology that's making our lives easier and comes with a few trust issues.
Yeah, I mean, we've got robots now working on the assembly lines, which are making jobs safer for humans and more efficient for production. As you mentioned, we got Boston Dynamics. We got autonomous vehicles coming now. I don't know if we can call Teslas yet to be robots, but they're certainly machines being driven by AI. In our home, we've seen the devices like the Roomba coming along and helping little robot on the floor doing the vacuuming. Do you think we're going to be comfortable with robot companions in the not-so-distant future? There's a much older demographic coming who won't have so much companionship, and nursing homes aren't the best place to go.
Yeah, well, those are a whole bunch of great insights all in one. I think we will all be very comfortable with AI companions. I mean, we're already comfortable, you know, at night before we're falling asleep, you know, checking our smartphone one more time for the text message or the game we're playing. And back in the 70s, when I was a little kid, we had pet rocks.
I remember.
And it was a long time ago. And, you know, one of the lessons of a pet rock or, you know, a dog that you love or anybody is that we can get, you know, humans form attachments with things. And computers are in a great place for the people that understand the code and use it to, you know, find ways to make us feel more attached to things which are not other human beings. So I think companionship is a great future. And certainly already there's been some terrific deployment of this in a good sense in nursing homes, as you alluded to, with dementia patients and so forth. And a computer has the patience to listen to someone that tells the same story 35 times in a row and to provide solace and comfort to that person. So they'll be great companions.
They will. I hope it doesn't turn out like the movie Her, where the computer actually gets bored with us and wants to find better companionship.
I love that movie. That Her was so great. Spike Jonze was hilarious. My favorite scene was the one where the computer runs off with was it Alan Watts? Alan Watts, the great philosopher from the Berkeley in the 60s, and the computer decides Alan Watts is far more interesting than the person that she's been assigned to.
Exactly. Right, and he asked, how many people are you actually talking to right now? And she said, rambled off something in the thousands.
Yeah.
AI is also used for shopping. Can you provide a few of the positive and maybe some negative aspects of how AI is now applied? And you talk a lot about, obviously, phones being AI devices.
We all know how Amazon seems to find a lot of options for us that seem like they could be appealing. And sometimes it's super annoying when the advertising servers are picking up our voices and sending us ideas for things to buy based on something it overheard. And there's some famous examples of that. I think where AI is just fantastic in terms of shopping is being able to search every data pool for potential pricing choices, options in ways that we could never do in the past. And of course, the danger is, you know, do we trust the results that come back? Is Amazon really giving us the best price? Is how much do we trust the algorithms that we're using to be in our interest and not the interest of the middleman or the vendor?
I actually know some software that Amazon and other companies, big box companies like Walmart, are using, and they're actually crawling the internet. The minute you make your request for a product, it crawls the internet to compare the prices to make sure it can come back with the best price, knowing that it will give you the best price so you won't go looking anywhere else.
Yeah, and when you begin to trust that it's doing that, then you're not doing your own research after a while. So they're very smart to do that, because the higher your trust in the algorithm, the less time you'll spend looking for options.
Exactly. Now, on the somewhat negative side, I used to work for a security software company where we built a hardware device to anonymize you. Many reasons. First of all, of course, not to be tracked. But one of the things was people don't know about dynamic pricing. And the dynamic pricing works. It's based on not just you, but where you are, what time of day it is. As an example, it would, if you're shopping for a hotel and you're at an airport and it's 10 o'clock at night, it knows it can hike the prices up on you because you're in a desperate situation. You need a hotel tonight and you're buying right now and you don't really have a lot of flexibility in your shopping. So it can, it may be a penny here and a penny there, but we've seen it do it. And that's the benefit. If you're traveling, bring a VPN with you, anonymize your location when you maybe want to do a little bit of shopping there. Pro tip.
Yeah, we use that. That's a great example. I think we used one in our film about airplane prices. The thing, they can tell like how much you've been shopping and what kinds of holes you're getting into, and they can change the price on you. And it's very difficult to keep up with the speed of the algorithms behind the scenes in pricing.
Right. One of the most positive things I found in the documentary was the application of medical technology using AI to help humans. Would you like to share a few of the examples from the movie or other examples you've seen where the use of medical AI is really, really helping humans?
Yeah, well, the most well-known examples are in radiology, where AI has become incredibly effective at looking at hundreds of thousands of images and being able to detect potential tumors and other problems that a radiology scan would come up with. One of the top people in the film said, you know, radiology might not be the perfect field for human beings in the future because image comparison by AI can be so effective. And you want to be able to see that a rare case that you might have is similar to a lady in Pakistan or something, and only an AI is going to be able to have that kind of depth of knowledge. So the more visual example we use in the film, of course, is a robot. And at the time we were filming, the Da Vinci robot, which does a lot of simple surgeries for surgeons, wasn't using deep learning or classic, you know, contemporary algorithm aspects to do it. It's mostly a remote control device. But those machines, the more they do them, the more experience they get. They can build in procedures and they know what's going to come next and they get better and better. So I think on the medical treatment front, is all kinds of future for it. And of course, in diagnostics and looking at our DNA, and as you were referencing before we started our podcast today, there's all kinds of insight that computers can do because their brains are very different than ours.
Yeah, one thing they don't have that we can do yet, I should say, is they don't have a sense of passion, or they make let's air quote it, the smartest decision, but it may not be the most compassionate decision. Like, should I do this? In the movie, it shows an example of the surgeon. He wasn't sure if he should proceed with the surgery, even though there was an 80% chance it would succeed. There was a 20% chance it wouldn't. And a computer is going to go, you know, 80 to 20, I'm going to go forward. I see the odds of it working, where a human still has a heart and will make different decisions. And what's better, the human making the passionate decision or the computer making the more accurate, air quote again, decision?
Dr. Brian Herman, out here working in a hospital from our film, brain doctor, and you know, he makes the point that if he had been just making the decision based on the AI data, he probably would have gone ahead and done the surgery, but that he does not do the surgery because he knows the patient very well, and he just has an intuitive feeling that maybe he should not do it, and that that's not what she would ultimately want. And this is a fascinating area. It kind of goes even to, you know, talk about, since we're staying on the movie theme a little bit, kind of Star Wars idea about, is our intuition, is there something there, another kind of intelligence that we have, whether we're channeling information from another, you know, another realm, or just our experience with as big-hearted people, that we can make decisions that are different than what the genius of an AI could make. And probably that's going to be the discussion for the rest of time in terms of where we use our intuition and other kinds of skills besides the analytic skills that AI can bring to something.
I also have a little concern about providing so much information to the computers and leaving it with these big tech companies and them controlling and owning our personally identifiable information, the concerns of them looking at our DNA, for example. Everybody, people like this ancestry and giving their DNA to companies who could then go, well, we've actually looked at your DNA and you're high risk for disease A, B, and C, and we're not going to insure you. I don't know if people realize that they, when they give up this information, they're not probably reading the terms and conditions that say Ancestry.com now owns your DNA and we can analyze it and share that with health companies. So
yeah.
Maybe I'm just paranoid.
No, and law enforcement and all kinds of things. I mean, all these cold cases from the 50s and 60s and 70s that are being solved because of information from DNA registries like Ancestry.com and so forth. Me, personally, I think I did one of these early DNA, you know, when it first came up. I think Sergey, one of the Google guys, was engaged to the gal that started one of these companies, DNA 23andMe.
Mm-hmm.
I was super intrigued by it. And then I found out, oh, God, you know, the venture capitalists own my DNA data. Where's this is going to be a disaster one day. And since then, I think I have two DNAs literally in my closet that I haven't taken, even though I kind of want to see what Ancestry has to say, just because I've got, like you, some nerves about it. It's like, I'm not sure. The flip side of it, and I hope I'm not going on too long here, but one of my big takeaways from this whole project on this issue or any other issue is that our information is going to be ubiquitous. It's almost impossible to hide or stay away from massive information sharing about ourselves. And that one of the goals, I mean, A is to like help people be aware of it so that they understand that privacy is almost a thing of the past.
Yeah.
So let's make sure that our laws and that our systems don't persecute us because of that. You know, if we're going to a certain kind of website or if we have a problem in our DNA somewhere, we need to make sure that our laws are protecting us and also that our culture of shame is not hanging over us so that we feel like we're going to get blackmailed at any moment or our information about us is going to get used against us. I think that might be one of the ways that we can confront where we're headed with this technology.
Yeah, I mean, the government's going to use the information. We know it. One of the technologies of AI, and this is a kind of a bit of a sidebar, we're seeing a lot of deep fakes going on. Maybe not a lot, but we're certainly seeing them going on. That's a big concern for me. One of the technologies we're doing at Veritone is actually making software to text to voice. And we're also working on some technology so we can tell when it's a human voice and when it's a computer voice. Do you see this, you know, voiceover technology, this deepfake technology as a big challenge? Or do you think it's maybe a fad we're going to see?
But even more so, super fascinating. I mean, the Turing test was like, can you tell if a computer is, you know, or a human being, right? So you're not talking about a text or a letter that's being written that Turing was imagining. You're talking about a human voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll cut to Hollywood. Hollywood, why is it that in the most advanced future society space movies, the computer is still talking like it's a talking moose? Like, come on. You know they'll have voices figured out. That's not going to be the hardest thing to do. But on the other hand, it is quite difficult. I think I can almost always tell right now, even with your software, which is amazing, that it's a synthetic voice because there's so much to it. It's very difficult to do a synthetic voice. I thought it was easier until I began looking at this technology. It's quite complicated. But once you have it, then you have the whole challenge of deep fakes. And are people posing as you? Is it, you know, your mother calls you up, she needs money, and it's actually somebody and ripping you off that's in El Salvador or something. And
right.
How would you know? So this is, I think that the other thing you mentioned about having technology that can tell that it is a computer is going to be very useful.
Exactly. I agree. Interesting, exciting, and keeps me awake at night. Here's another one that keeps me awake at night. The use of autonomous weapons seems a bit concerning, as you mentioned Terminator before. Do you see the application of AI concerning and how we're going to use it in our weaponry?
Well, it's a big chapter of our film, Do You Trust This Computer, was about the military. And certainly, I think it was sort of our act two of our film was how really effective we use AI to control weapons and swarming technology like we've never seen, like being attacked by a swarm of military bees or controlling a pack of robotic dogs, and something that you can't do individually with remote controls very well. But if you have a centralized computer doing it and understanding attack formations, and there's no ethical restrictions on what they're doing, this could, I mean, we're in a really tight jam. And the second piece of how AI will be extremely effective is counter Navy or counter Air Force techniques. You can, with a, in a film, we have an example of a $500 algorithm that brought down in a simulator an F-14 or another modern airplane, or a virus that gets into a billion-dollar battleship and takes it down. So AI in the military is, first of all, it's coming strong. And I don't think there's any way to stop it except to be very smart about protecting against its use against you. Even yesterday with Biden and Putin, the one thing they came away with was having restrictions, trying to agree to restrictions on how cyber warfare was going to be used in the future, like which industries were going to be restricted. So I think we'll see a big treaty between the superpowers. I hope there will be, that we're not going to go after each other's food chain. We're not going to, shut down our power grids because we're outmatched.
Another bad business, or a good business, depending on which side of the stock market you're on, is the stock market. And we saw AI crash the market a few years back. Do you think we need to have to worry about AI crashing our stock market or taking over and running our stock market, and not too distant future, all our 401ks evaporating in one bad AI moment? And I shouldn't just say AI moment, it's software, of course, and it's people, but the intelligence of the software is running amok.
Right. Well, we chose that as a chapter for a film, and the most spectacular public example was the flash crash that happened few years ago. There has not been another one that we know of.
Right.
However, what is happening is there are all kinds of indexed hedge funds that are using AI, deep learning, and so forth to try to make money in the markets. The anecdotal stories I've heard from some of the mathematicians that get pulled out of the top schools in our country is that instead of going to solve the pressing problems of our time, they go work for these hedge funds, and they try to create like all kinds of prototypical deep learning AI algorithms that can make a lot of money hypothetically. And if they start to really make money in the market, then they actually give them money and they see how well they can do. But what could possibly go wrong?
Right.
Lots can go wrong. So SEC will not be able to stay ahead of this, but I think the more we talk about it and we're aware of it and we put in regulations where we can have circuit breakers go off so that we don't melt our economies or each other's economies, that's going to be a very wise move.
Totally. Beyond the challenges we've just covered, what else do you see as big hurdles that we need to cross as AI gets better, improves, and new applications are coming along?
As you remember from our premiere, Elon Musk came in and was a big fan of the movie and decided that he wanted to buy it and distribute it and so forth. But none of the concerns that we've talked about so far are even on his list, really. He and a group of people are very concerned about a supreme artificial intelligence, sometimes known as AGI or superintelligence, about computers just leaving human beings behind in what seems like a science fiction scenario. But other folks believe that this is coming very soon to us and that it's a true danger. We decided to put it in the movie and to discuss because some of the brightest people in the room that we talked to around the world said that this is the time to think about these dangers and not when it's too late and these things have already gotten out of control. And even if the chance is only 5% that AI could really get so smart that it could be a sentient demon, if you would, it's worth thinking about how to maybe avoid that scenario now.
Right.
And our movie takes a pretty tough tone about artificial intelligence. And the reason is because we felt like, well, this is the time for us to be aware of problems and for us to talk about problems rather than just give ourselves up to the marketing of artificial intelligence, which, of course, is supporting business interests and other things that we all want.
I think Elon said it best. He goes, when we start seeing the robot walking down the street, it's way past beyond being worried about AI. It's already here, and it's already going to be a problem.
That's right. Another quote that he had that we couldn't use in the movie that I really wanted to, but it goes back to your shopping example. And which is, as AI learns, the algorithms learn our preferences and exactly which take out food we like and what movies we like and what kinds of partners we want to have and all the rest of it, that eventually we can get groomed into being no more than, you know, house cats. In the famous last scene of, you have the WALL-E model in your background there, you know, at the end of WALL-E, all the human beings are on these big space cruise ships, and their every comfort need is being taken care of. But it takes away from the potential of humanity if we're just being catered to for our basest desires.
True. We're almost out of time. AI is changing the job market today. There's obviously jobs becoming obsolete and new jobs coming. What's our future with AI taking over jobs, and what new opportunities are there for us?
Many possible outcomes. I think, A, if I were getting out of college now and I was a little better in mathematics, I would want to be learning algorithms and become a master of code. A lot of my musician friends got into algorithms, and there's a lot of comparison between the mathematics of code and music or things. So these are bridgeable. I think for your average person, I think there's reason to be concerned that a lot of jobs could just go away, and that we should be campaigning for a system that is sending out checks to us, that the automated crop machines and all these jobs that we used to have to do by hand are actually helping to create a society in which there's
no jobs.
You're supported without jobs. Yeah. Wow. What's the word I can't? What did Andrew Yang campaign on?
Oh, he'd give every American like a $5,000 check.
Basic income.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And it's kind of what's happened after the pandemic. Everybody got a basic income check, or most people did, because they weren't able to work. Well, if AI and robots and efficiency and capitalism keep running down this road and there's less and less jobs, we probably want to have a basic income. And Jonah Nolan in our film makes this great point. Says, well, it's one thing to have a check coming, but humans get inspired by having passion projects in their lives. And so we owe it to ourselves to understand what, you know, makes us passionate about our lives and the kinds of work that we want to do, even if robots are taken care of or AI is taking care of a lot of the essential needs. But yeah, it's a speculation.
At Veritone, we have a theme, well, it's maybe not just ours, but it's human in the loop, human on the loop, and human out of the loop. The human in the loop is really, there's no digital workers, there's no AI taking over the role of what you're doing. The human in the loop is you're working together with AI to it does like the legwork of the labor, the hard stuff, and then you're reviewing and verifying and making sure the AI is making the right decisions. And then we've got the human completely out of the loop, where the AI is taking over and completely self-sufficient. I think right now, well, we're in human on the loop. And that's kind of what we're doing at Veritone, is we're building products that really complement a human, doesn't put a human out of a job, just takes some of the stuff they did, helps them do it faster or more efficiently, and in many cases just takes the monotony out of their job and helps them do it faster, or just makes it more rewarding. Like you say, you enjoy your job more because you can focus more on the stuff where you're making decisions and less data entry or tedious routines.
This is a great way to end this, because we've talked about a lot of the things to be nervous about. But on the flip side, and I think there's reasons to believe this is coming true as well, that there's so much more potential we can have as humans with computer tools. We've already done so much stuff with this technology as it is. There's so much more we can do. Why do we need to shuck potatoes if we can work on something else and a computer can do that?
Mm-hmm.
In the best scenario, AI is a fantastic tool for our future. We just have to be careful, because like every tool humans have ever invented, we need to pay attention.
Exactly. Well, this has been fascinating. I've really enjoyed this conversation, Chris. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we call it a day and let you move on to your next movie? I believe you're working on another movie, but we'll save that for possibly another conversation.
Sure enough, yeah. The movie, if you want to see Do You Trust This Computer, it's on a lot of platforms out there, or you can probably even find it on YouTube if you watch their commercials. So, I hope people can enjoy that, and we hope to have another film like that in the works at some point, too.
Well, Chris, this has been great. I look forward to talking to you again, and I'll probably run into you in virtual reality, which is actually the last place we were talking to each other. I ran into him from other worlds, and last time I saw him, we were both avatars, so maybe I'll see you as an avatar the next time we catch up.
We'll see you at BRCVR, the virtual Burning Man. In the actual Burning Man this year, we're letting the computers do it, and we humans can go participate as avatars. It's actually quite exciting. Yeah, that's great. That's where we saw each other. Okay, we'll see you there next time.
Sounds good, Chris. Thank you very much. See you later, buddy.
Bye.
You've been listening to our guest, Chris Payne, director of Do You Trust This Computer? He's also the director of a movie called Who Killed the Electric Car? We'll have links to Chris's productions on the speaker notes on our podcast blog. Thank you for joining us for Adventures in AI, the podcast that dives into the many ways artificial intelligence is shaping our future for the better. Have a great day.